Hello and welcome to the Freaking Awesome Podcast. It is Sunday, January 14th, 2018. I'm Benjamin Abaya, and joining me today is my wet and wild twin brother, John Abaya.
Yeah, it's wet out here in good old city that we're from, Sacramento. It's raining, pouring. The weather's it's cold today. That's your forecast, Ben.
I'm thank you.
Meteorologist. John.
Back to you.
Yeah, back to you. For sports. Yeah. Da, 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 da. Patriots won again.
So if you're new to the podcast, we usually discuss and give our impression of what we watch, listen, play it, or read throughout the week. And we conclude the episode with a main discussion. This week's main discussion is a new film from Guillermo del Toro, The Shape of Water. That film came out a couple weeks ago, but because he won the best director in Golden Globes, we want to watch it. Now, I think we're big fans of Guillermo del Toro, so,
yes. You know. It's just, I didn't have any time to watch this in the theaters, and this had, like, a limited run. Like, it didn't really, like, in our place, it's only shown in, like, a couple of theaters, and the times are, like, really distant from each other. It's either early in the morning, a weird time in the afternoon, and really late at night.
Yes, I also agree. We didn't have time, and then when we did watch it, it was like not completely empty, probably like one third of the theater is full.
For me, it's almost maybe the whole theater is full.
I think you watch it in a better time.
Yeah,
we watch it in the middle of the week.
I watched it in the weekend, yes.
Yeah. Anyway, before all of that, we do have a teaser trailer talk. This week's teaser trailer talk is Summer of 84.
If I've learned anything, that people hardly ever let you know who they really are. Inside any house, anything could be happening and you'd never know.
You think a bunch of glorified Care Bears in hoods could take down the Empire?
They are aliens and they're highly intelligent.
Scientifically the perfect woman.
There's a serial killer on the loose.
What else could possibly be this exciting?
Mackie is the Cape May Slayer.
Dude, Mackie's a cop with a sick reputation.
That's why it's so genius.
So that is a small clip from the summer of 84. It's from the filmmakers of Turbo Kid, which was like a Netflix film that came out a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
They are well known as being called RKSS, which is stands. I don't know what it stands for technically, but composes of filmmakers of Francosa, Samard, Anako, Wissel, and Yanan Carl Wissel. Assuming the latter are brothers. but I don't know anything about them except for Turbo Kid. Here is the description on IMDb. After suspecting that their police officer neighbor is a serial killer, a group of teenage friends spend their summer spying on him and gathering evidence. But as they get closer to discovering the truth, things get dangerous. It stars a bunch of folks that I don't know that well, but I'm going to pronounce their names the best I can. Graham Versacher, Judah Lewis, Caleb Emery. Caleb Emery, Corey Grutter Andrew, Tierra Scarbay, Rich Summer. Once again, I apologize if I just, you know, didn't do justice in your last name mostly. But John, we are actually fans of Turbo Kid.
Yes.
I think we did talk about it on this podcast.
Was actually in our top, the freaking awesome list of that year of 2016. Apple from Turbo Kid was.
Yes, yes. It is. Yeah, it was. So what's your, you know, thoughts about this teaser trailer? That is actually, the film is supposed to come out this month on the 22nd.
Really?
Yeah.
When? It's in the movie theaters?
I don't know. I think probably on Netflix.
Okay. I'll check that out. My thoughts on it is drenched in nostalgia of 80s movies. They're not shying away from any of that stuff at all. The movie itself is called Summer of 84. It's, you know, when you watch it, it seems like another Goonies now, Stranger Things now, What else is doing that recently? Oh, the new It movie. Well, any type of those type of movies where a group of kids are solving a mystery. And they're doing a great job of the way they look, the look of it, especially the soundtrack. I love the soundtrack of Turbo Kid when it came out. It's one of those soundtracks where I would listen to the whole thing just because it was so good. And I don't know if it's the same composer as Turbo Kid, but I'm just loving it was. I thought you said something. Sorry. But yeah, I don't know if it's the same composer, but I'm really digging the soundtrack from the teaser trailer. I'm looking forward to it. I wonder if there's a twist to this film. The teaser trailer just seemed like another one of those type of films. But if the kids are great, acting, I'll watch it. There's sometimes you miss or hit with those type of things. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm also looking forward. I think they got the aesthetic of the 80s really well. Especially if you watch all their ads and their promos.
Mm-hmm.
It basically is reflected of like the posters and everything from, you know, the slasher films from the 80s. It is, you know, indicative to all that, which is kind of cool to see that. But it is on that trend of 80s nostalgia. I feel like either people will get tired of it or just going to, you know, cash it in. But I think at the moment, a lot of entertainment is really great right so far, from Stranger Things to It. Mm-hmm. So I think they're doing a good job of capturing that nostalgia. And can't wait what's the mystery about and whatnot. And mm-hmm. It does remind me of like, what's that one film where they do find a body?
Oh, Stand By Me?
Yeah, Stand By Me, but more sinister looking.
Yep, yeah.
Yeah.
I wish, though, like it was the summer of 94, like a different time period that we grew up more in the 90s thing. I just want to see that, like those type of films.
I think that would be the next trend is the 90s.
Mm-hmm. I mean, sure. It, the remake of It is the closest thing to that, I believe. Like the way the style, or, well, is that 80s too?
That was 80s. Okay, that was 80s.
Yeah. Because Gremlins came out just then. Yeah, and I think that movie came out in 84. They showed a poster of Gremlins.
I think it was 85.
Yeah, that around that time.
Place, yeah. I think it's try to follow the book, but reverse it.
Like the next one will be in our 2007. Yeah. 18, I think.
Yeah. Yep, that's exactly how it is. So that is a summer of 84. Which is possibly coming out this month on the 22nd, but I'm not sure if it's going to be on VOD or movie theaters. But those the group of filmmakers there who are contributing is they're interesting filmmakers.
Yep.
I think they got something there, and then I want to see. I think Turbo Kid was something different that they captured that B movie aesthetic, and this one they're capturing the 80s aesthetic. So really looking forward.
Mm-hmm.
So speaking of gruesome, no, I don't think none of us talked about gruesome, but you also watched something that's also equally horrifying. What did you watch this week?
Before I go talk about the thing I watched, I just want to say a shout out to people who played Splatfest this over the weekend. It's part of Splatoon 2. They do this every week, but it was between Ben. If you had to pick between team action or team comedy, which one would you pick by movie-wise?
I would always pick team comedy.
Okay, over action. Yes. That's the correct answer. I pick team comedy. If you've never played Splatoon 2, they do this thing called Splatfest. Basically, it's you pick a team and then that you fight for that team throughout the weekend. And it ended yesterday, not throughout the whole weekend, but for one whole day they do it. And then the more wins you play against the other team, or the more wins you get for your team, the better chances you get winning the whole Splatfest. And then they determine that by their solo teams and overall votes. Team Action actually won for overall votes. They had 84 or something like that. Something, not 84, maybe like 60 in the 60s versus the 40s that people picked for comedy. But comedy barely won, winning the solo and team rankings, in which they won 51%. So they barely we barely won. But yeah, it was truly fun. I like playing this game, that game mode. It only happens, like I said, once in a while. They do it in like these funny ways. I think a couple of months or last December was sweaters versus socks or something like that and whatnot. I lost that. I'm this is the first time I actually won a Splatfest like for the team, so I was very happy about that. Moving on to something that I watched is a new film that came out last year. The original title that I've looked it up, I did not know this. It was called Grave. Did you know about that?
Yeah, because it's a French film, right, John?
Yes, it's a French film, yes.
It's a foreign film, so.
Mm-hmm. So the American title for it is called Raw. So real quick, the synopsis for the film is when a young vegetarian undergoes a carnivorous. Yeah, hazing ritual at a vet school, an unbidden taste for meat begins to grow in her. Directed by Julia DeCorno and written by Julia DeCorno and it's original screenplay by her, sorry, and starring Garnice Marrella, Ella Rumpuff, Raba Nati Ophelia, Lorette Lucas, and Joanna Preece. And yeah, it is
the freaking awesome podcast where we cannot pronounce.
Yes, especially I think like you said earlier, I'm battling like a small little cold right now, so my nose is kind of stuffy. So if I sound kind of weird, I'm trying to breathe and talk at the same time. Without the mucus getting in the way. Speaking of mucus, this movie is very, like it says, it's a very raw movie. It is not for the faint of heart. If I'm going to this movie, if you don't like blood or anything like that type of thing, there's a lot, not in the way of like how, quote unquote, when they say gore porn, it's not nothing like that. It's more of like there's just situations that this you see that it's possible, but it's, if you see that in real life, yeah, it's going to be disgusting and whatnot. But it's a movie that I felt like it has an undertone of a simple metaphor that I don't want to say out loud or say because it might spoil the movie, but I really loved it, like just the way they showed it. It's more of a drama than horror, I would say, and anything else of this it is a teenager, first time in college, and the way her anxiety and everything happens around her. And I think it's more like for that type of, the film shows that a lot well. Oh, well, shows it well in the way her, what's her name? Garris performs. She plays a character named Justine. But the surprising part of this movie, I think, is the hazing ritual at the vet school. It's very, really, I don't know how colleges are. I haven't been to a college in the last, 15 years or so. So I'm very surprising how much they can get away with and how much stuff they can do in the hazing process. And just the way they show, like, when they use drugs and sex and whatnot, and even like a little bit violent in a weird way, but it's just weird just to see that. And this is happening in college and the teachers are okay with it. I was like, okay, I guess so, this is France, I guess. I don't know if this happens in America, but that surprised me more than anything else in the movie.
I feel like, yeah, you make it sound like it's a real life thing.
Yeah, that's why I'm wondering, like, does this really happen in France or now in colleges today? Because I would like step up, like say, no, this is kind of weird and wrong. Like, why are we doing this? Just because we're freshmen and stuff like that. It's just it's a weird thing to do, especially in college. I mean, there's ways you could haze people, I guess, in a good way. But the way they do stuff in here, I don't know. It's just it made me feel like odd. It the whole movie made me feel like it's like cringe a little bit, but the message about it is really good. But yeah, I enjoyed it a lot. You can actually watch this movie right now on Netflix. It's streaming. I've heard of it last year. I always wanted to watch it, but I had never seen it or come out in our movie theaters. So I was like really happy that it came out on Netflix.
It did come out in our theaters, but for a limited time. I think it was like a couple of weeks only.
Okay.
Yeah, I was meaning to watch it in like art theaters, but yeah, I didn't have time. Mm-hmm. Plus, it's like I didn't know what to expect because I knew the subject matter and I didn't know if I could handle that in front of, like, you know, a group of people. I mean, I could handle that, but I was like, I wonder what other people would think if I was in a movie theater. Like, I'll see people walk out and it'll be distracting.
Mm-hmm. They, like, yeah. Similar to like how Guillermo del Toro style of filming, this film doesn't back down of like what they show. They don't, they don't exploit it. That's the word, right?
Exploit, yeah.
Yeah, they don't exploit it that well. They do it well where it doesn't feel like exploiting anything. Like when they show a nude scene and whatnot, it's similar to how like Guillermo del Toro, that we'll talk about too, like in The Shape of Water, he does a really great job at doing that.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to watch it. It is one of the films I have on my... I have this list every year. I always add like 20 films because these are the 20 films that people are talking about online, and I always add to it. It's up to like almost 100. I've been doing it ever like 4 years straight or 5 years straight, and it's like, yeah, it's one of those films where it's only films I know that's accessible, and I think that is one of the films I could watch right now because it's on Netflix and whatnot. So yeah, looking forward to Raw, which is on Netflix right now. So that is it for what we've been doing this past week. We're going to go straight to the main discussion. This week's main discussion is The Shape of Water.
When he looks at me, he doesn't know how I am incomplete. He sees me as I am.
J'avoue, j'en ai bavé pas vous, mon amour. Avant d'avoir eu vent de vous.
The natives in the Amazon worship him like a god.
Get him out. What are you talking about? No.
We need to take it apart, learn how it works.
I don't want an intricate, beautiful thing destroyed.
We can do nothing. I'm sorry.
Don't do this, Elasa.
What is she saying?
Don't do this.
Oh, God, it's not even human.
So that is a clip from the trailer of The Shape of Water, directed and co-written by Guillermo del Toro, starring Sally Hawkins, Michael Shannon, Richard Dawkins, Doug Jones, Michael Stahlberg, and Octavia Spencer. This is this plot synopsis from IMDb. A top secret research facility in the 1960s, a lonely janitor forms a unique relationship with an amphibious creature that is being held in captivity. So John, you're a fan of Guillermo del Toro.
Yes.
What is your relationship with his films? And what are your thoughts about this film? Or do you want me to start because you've been talking for quite some time?
You can start, but I really love Guillermo del Toro films.
I am a huge fan of his films. I think I've watched everything except one of his earlier films. I forgot what's the name of it, but I know it's in Spanish.
Okay.
I did watch, was it? It's a horror film too. I think it's Kronos.
Okay.
It's one of them. It's like the one of the first two films he's done. But I've started my liking of him is from Pan's Labyrinth.
Yes, same here.
Which is like almost 10 years ago, or longer than 10 years ago. And then I went back to watch his other film, which is like Mimic. Mm-hmm. I don't think people realize that he, you know, directed that film.
I watched Mimic. I didn't know. I didn't realize too. Like he watched that, directed that, or did, you know, he wasn't on my radar, and I didn't like Mimic at all when it came out.
Yeah,
I haven't watched since then. So I wonder how well I receive it now.
There's probably like a little bit of a disconnect between that film and art culture. I think. I don't know if he could make that film now, but with his now, like what he could do with his budget and whatnot. I think at the time it was probably like you could tell like it could be pressured into, you know, whatever Hollywood standards are. And then he created Blade 2,
yes.
Which is like one of the better Marvel superhero films the past 20 years. But yeah, then ever since then, I've always fell in love with his creations. He's well known for having creature features. A lot of it is prosthetics and practical effects.
Yes.
A lot of practical effects and whatnot. And I noticed like when it comes to from even Hellboy, both Hellboy films and Pacific Rim. I think Pacific Rim is his big budget film, and which heavily relies on computer animation and visual effects. And you could tell, like, that was his first, you know, dive into that when it comes to that much computer animation. And I think it did it well enough where it's believable, but you could just tell, like, you could see through the seams and whatnot. Mm-hmm. While, like, his other films, like Hellboys and Hellboy 2, The Golden Army, I think it's called.
Yes.
It's a lot more practical. And then even when there was visual effects in there that you couldn't, it didn't remove you from your experience of the film. So yeah, I think we're both big fans. I'm assuming, speaking for both of us.
Yes.
So with The Shape of Water, when we found out about this film, I was really captured by the look. I think the aesthetic is really well realized, and it reminded me of BioShock. I don't play that game, but that's what it reminded me initially. When you actually watch the film, it had nothing to do with that at all. And then when you realize it's from the 1960s and he actually had something to say, that's when everything in my mind was putting together. So I did find the film really eloquent and absolutely lovely. If you're a film lover, a cinephile, what Guillermo del Toro has crafted is like a response to what films can be. And it reminded me of like The Last Jedi. You know, like bending the rules and subverting your expectations. Yeah. It's a genre film, but it's also a drama. It's a monster film, but it's also a romantic film, which is really cool. It has all the ingredients for something that's bold and daring. I think Sally Hawkins' character is amazing. She has all the inclinations of like a silent film star like Buster Keaton. Everything she does is really cool. Like in the first 10 minutes is really lovely. She's really charming to see on like the silver screen. And then Doug Jones' character, the Philbian man, is intricate and vulnerable, but yet frightening at times. And I think he balanced it really well in this film. And just watching Guillermo del Toro using like the civil rights movement and the Cold War stereo is a great commentary of today's times. And it hits the right notes. And then and speaking of notes, like the composer Andre Desplat score is really great too. And it reflects of what they were aiming for. And it reminds me of Amelie too a little bit.
Yep, the color palette. That's exactly how I felt too.
Yeah. And I think people mistaken that, oh, he's probably, you know, inspired by that film. But I think he, on Twitter, he's been expressing like how he got the aesthetic. And then it's from paintings from a certain artist, animation and whatnot. So I really love, like, I feel like this is a complete film. I don't think there's one thing I didn't dislike about it. Even I could, like, I think I could argue with every aspect of it, even with Michael Shannon's character. And they even showed a little bit of his, like, gray area. Like, he isn't just a villain who's just getting out. Like, he actually has a story and why he is doing certain things. And then I think setting it in the 1960s is really well done because there's no advanced technology whatsoever. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then I just want to add, like, Richard Jenkins plays a really wonderful character here that at first I was, like, questioning him, and then later on you cheer for him.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. And also, like, shout out to Octavia Spencer and Michael Stahlberg. This is a really great cast, and everyone that was involved did a really great job. And also, a shout out to the cinematographer, Dan Laniston. It's really, you know, well-composed film. So, yeah. What else? I think I have one more shout-out. It's also, because I said it was co-written by Guillermo del Toro. And then I think the other the person that is helped written is Vanessa Taylor. Mm-hmm. And I think you could see the balance in it. And I think he's better when he's balanced with another writer.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it lets him hone in to what he wants to say. But yeah. So John, what can you say about this film that I haven't said, or did you even like the film?
I hated the film. Not my cup of tea. No, that's, you said everything that I was thinking of, and that's it. Let's end the podcast right now and just do our plugs. But yeah. Yeah. I watched this movie with my wife. My wife, funny story, before this movie came out, before the trailer, anything else, my wife had a dream. And then she was telling me about this dream about she was in this facility and then she met like a monster that's underwater and whatnot. And then she wanted to know more about this monster. And she was like telling me like, oh, it looked like the monster from, you know, the Blue Lagoon, or not Blue Lagoon. What's that movie called? The classic monster. God, I forgot the name of it.
The creature from the Black Lagoon.
The Black Lagoon,
which is inspired by Guillermo del Toro. Yes, when it comes to this film.
And she told me about this, and then probably months after that thing, I was like, I saw the trailer. I was like, "This is your dream?" And she's like, oh, "That is my dream. They made a movie about my dream." It's like, wow, that's like insane. Like not exactly like anything, but little just to see that her dream came to life, like the imagery, she was really surprised. And yeah, I watched it with her last night and she loved it too. We watched it in a really like I said earlier, like a packed crowd. I was really surprised. It is a small theater. It's probably 100 people, not even, probably less than, yeah, exactly 100 people. It's one of those theaters where you only pay $6. It's really cheap. I don't know what you call those type of theaters, but mostly they play the movies that were old, basically, and then then you get to pay.
Wait, what movie theater is this?
The UA inside the mall.
Oh yes. Yeah.
What do you call those type of theaters where it's like cheap seats? I guess you could say like it's discounted movie tickets because they're older movie theaters. But yeah, most of people were older people. I was really surprised, only because I think it felt like if you watch a trailer, it felt like a romantic movie to bring someone. And it's like you said, it was it has a great balance of that, like drama, romantic, a little bit of horror in some ways. Like, you didn't know where was it heading. Like, I was waiting for the shoe to drop and thinking like, this has to be like a weird horror movie, right? And then, nope, it stayed in its lane and it balanced itself really well. Doug Jones is incredible, and not incredible, but he's great in here. Like, all the, you think it's like special effects, like CGI, but he has, if you look back, like in the making of, it's prosthetics and practical effects. They use, you know, robotics. They use the same style of Abe, I guess, in Hellboy. That's the closest thing. And did you think, because this is original screenplay from him, I thought this is going to be like a weird origin story. Like, we don't have like a split all of a sudden, like, oh, like it's the origin story of this. But I'm happy they didn't do that. I don't want the shared universe again, like everyone's trying to do it. But he does a great job, Del Toro, of just provoking that. It's like, it felt like a classic film. And the when you watch it, it has great messages all around. Like, he balanced that so well. And just to see all these characters in just interacting with each other is great. Just when you see them separate and then actually like combining them later on in this in the third act in a weird way. I don't want to spoil anything, but yeah, I echo everything that you have said, Ben. It's a great film. I think you should watch it with someone that you love, just because I love the love story of aspect of it. Michael Shannon is always playing a crazy person, and I love his acting is so good. Like, I was like, oh, this guy's so good. So he plays evil so well. I was like, oh man, this guy, he's just surprising. And Richard Jenkins surprised me a lot in this movie, especially his character, and I just the way he is in life and how lonely he is. But yeah, it's sad, but the same way, it's towards the end, it's heartwarming. Octavia Spencer is a great character too, with her relationship with Sally Hawkins' character. They do a really good balance of the comedy, especially with them two, of how she, because Sally Hawkins is mute in the film. They do some funny, especially the bit with her spelling letters out. Everyone laughed at that. I don't know. Did you laugh at that, Ben?
I did. Okay. I think bringing up that, I feel like they did it a really good job where it wasn't distasteful what she's doing when it comes to her being mute. Like, they didn't use her, I guess you could say, like, her disability as like a comedy effect. Like,
yeah, yes.
It is her being a mute. It adds to the story of the themes of mm-hmm. the story.
How these, like, group of misfits that
society, yeah, sort of like, like, especially during the 1960s, where at the time I feel like folks weren't really accepting when it comes to that. Like, there's a hint of, you know, the civil rights movement here, and then Octavia Spencer, who plays an African American woman, who is African American, yeah, is also told in, like, the, as like a you know, as a theme in the film, mm-hmm. and I don't want to, like, ruin the film for everyone, but there are a little bit like these character moments where I didn't expect, and then once they are played out and you see the effects of it, I was, like, really grounded, because I was like, wow, this is really cool that this is in this type of film, like a genre film, mm-hmm, that they get to talk about this top, you know, this stuff on a genre film. Like, you usually don't see that at all, like the commentary.
Yep.
And I think he did it a great job, Del Toro.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel that Del Toro should helm the Dark Universe for Universal now?
Yeah.
I feel like
this should be the beginning of the
action way. Like, you can have a little bit action, but I feel like he balanced it so well. Like, this should be it. This should be where the classic monsters, like, you know. Yeah,
his interpretation of the classic monsters.
Like, yeah. I want to see a Dracula film like this. Like, the action films are great for what it is, but I feel like this is the way you should treat the characters like this. Like, if this was about the creature from the Black Lagoon, this would have been like, oh, that's kind of cool. Like, this movie alone is really, I really like it already.
Yeah.
But yeah, if they want to go that route, get Del Toro on it right away.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I think we really love this film and this podcast. If I were to write a list again, this would have been part of the freaking awesome 17 things last year.
Same here.
Yeah.
This is would have been one of my top five films of last year.
So, really love it. It's out in theaters right now. We recommend it. So that is The Shape of Water by Guillermo del Toro. How would you pronounce that again, John?
Guillermo I'm saying that word wrong too. People right now who are listening is like, man, these guys,
it's Guillermo del Toro. Mm-hmm. I apologize again. I think it's just the sickness, and when I do these podcasts, when I prepare myself, I always have something to make it easier for me. Mm-hmm. But once you're, like, sick, it's kind of hard to
background behind the scenes. We would watch YouTube videos of people pronouncing these people's names just to get it right.
I still do that.
Okay, yes. That's what I'm just letting the listeners know that. Yeah, we're not just, like, reading it. We actually, like, look up sources of, like, how do you say this person? Like, especially, like, Gal Gadot. Like, I still don't know which way to say that, because many people say, oh, Gal it's this Gadot, way or that way.
Yeah, they do Gal Gadot.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, like, some of those YouTube videos are also probably wrong, too.
Yes,
it is Guillermo del Toro. Guillermo del Toro. I should have just take the snippet and just replace it every time I say his name. he's a wonderful director, and looking forward to his other films. So, John, before we leave, where can they find you in the deep blue sea of this world wide web?
I am on Twitter. I am the most organized Twitter feed of 2018. You can check me out at AbayaArts.
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Benjamin Abaya. You can find all of us on thefreakingawesome.com. You can reach us on TFA Now on Twitter, which stands for The Freaking Awesome Now. We did have a Twitter question, but I think only you answered it, John. It was a really tough question. It's about what resonated with you. I think we always ask a similar question every year.
Do you want to read my response?
No. No, it's okay. They could go up and read it up, listeners. So you go, if you want to email us, it's at contacts@thefreakingawesome.com. I think that's it. If you want to listen to everything, it is on iTunes and Stitcher and all those other podcast apps.
Oh, also, if you're wondering like why there's a number there in our thing now, so like last week I went back and we have a history, a legacy, you could say, on this Freaking Awesome podcast. We've been recording since 2010 or nine. Yes, 2009. So I went back and then I just want to put this, the number out there of like how many episodes of we've recorded over the last 10 years. We did take a huge break, probably like a 4 or 5 years, 3 year break and stuff like that. This, what you're listening to now is like the reboot, second or third reboot of this podcast.
Yeah.
Basically, it's a weird legacy we have of this podcast. So I put the new number. It's 215 last week. So this episode is actually 216. Mostly that will be only on the podcast feed. We will not start the episode saying this is episode 217 or anything like that. It's mostly just to keep stuff in order. So if you're wondering like, oh, which one is this one? Like the, or to shout out which episode was it? Oh, it's an episode 215. So you can go back that versus the date, because the date sometimes gets messy, especially if you don't write the correct date on the podcast. It messes up the feed and whatnot. But so, yeah. So just so people are wondering, like, why is there a number of last week's episode?
Cool. Thank you for verifying that and clarifying. Mm-hmm. But that's it. Thank you for listening again. I'm Benjamin Abaya.
I'm John Abaya.
And this has been the Freaking Awesome Podcast.